Parkcast, the UK's original theme park podcast.
Welcome back to Parkcast Park fans. You should know by now, we're your podcast for theme park fans. If that's you, you have found yourself in the right place. I'm Vex, and I'm joined this week once again from the Isle of Man. Alex Brindley's here.
Morning, how are we?
Oh, very well. Very well. I'm hot and sweaty because I'm in Saudi and it's 35 degrees here at the moment, and I can't have my aircon on whilst I record this. So if you're watching this on YouTube, because there is a YouTube version available, I am looking sweaty and I apologise. But
if it makes you feel any better here in the Isle of Man, it's a lovely sunny morning, but we've had 2 days of rain, which has been nice. The grass is going greener again, but the temperature's around about, 15? My air conditioning unit's working beautifully. It's lovely here, Bex.
Oh, and do you know what? I love the UK in the autumn as well, so you are making me a little bit jealous. But you're here this week to talk about PortAventura, because we briefly mentioned on the episode last week that you'd been, and I can't remember what you said, but you dropped in a little comment, and I said, oh, that's another episode. And funnily enough, after that episode went out, Russell messaged me. Hi, Russell, regular listener to the podcast. And he said,
Russell,
I've just heard you mention PortAventura. I've just booked it for next year. Have I made a mistake? So I thought we could talk about that this week. Before we do, I just want to very quickly mention, if you are listening to this podcast on the day it goes out, which is Friday the 28th of August, today is your last day to vote in the UK Theme Park Awards. I'm not begging for votes. I have been nominated, but I'm not begging for votes. But please go and vote for somebody, not just in the content creator category. I mean, you can completely ignore that if you want to, but this is a really good chance to tell the theme park industry who is doing some great stuff. Who do you think deserves an award this year for what they've done? Because there are some UK theme parks doing amazing things, and they really deserve to be rewarded for that. So if you do nothing else today other than listen to this podcast and make your vote, please do that. And if you do want to leave a vote for your favourite podcast in the content creator category, of course, I will be eternally grateful. And next time I see you, I'll give you a big high five. How's that for a deal?
Of course,
you've placed your vote already.
You owe me a lot of high fives, I have to say. That I've been sitting here clicking like crazy for hours, you know.
Have you got one of those ducks, you know, that just like taps up?
I do actually have one of those somewhere. I've got a whole load of stuff in this room here. I've got a bouncing duck somewhere.
Thank you very much. If I win, which I won't, we know who to thank for that. Right, on to the main subject of today's episode, which is PortAventura, which is a park that you, Alex, very much love. You are literally wearing... Are you wearing a PortAventura t-shirt?
Oh, yes. No, this is a PortAventura t-shirt. It's a Woody one. It doesn't actually say PortAventura, but it is a PortAventura t-shirt, yes.
And it's a park that you love, and it's a park that you've been to a lot. And you went just a few weeks ago, part of your summer holiday.
That's the reason for this tan. It's definitely not an Isle of Man tan. I really love it because, you know, I as anyone who's tuned into the podcast before and heard us chatting with Glenn, who's not here today, we should be wearing a black armband.
We should. The flag's at half mast. I mean, he's not dead, but
no. He's definitely alive, but he's never been to PortAventura.
He never has. So this episode is going to go one of two ways.
Yeah, it's going to go one of two ways. I feel that we should the three of us get a tour bus and go there, and we'll do an episode live. That'd be great. I love PortAventura because I'm a big theme park, and it's the theme pit rather than just the rides, a theme park aficionado, and I love the theming of places like Disney. But I've always felt that one of my big faves when it comes to theming is like Western theming and old Americana, and Disney with their Frontierland, I've never felt has done it justice. If you look at the old Western films, these spaghetti Westerns and things like this, it's always like an arid desert, and everything's very, you know, the beiges and the browns and what Big Thunder Mountain looks like. But then when you go to Disney, they seem to just add a huge amount of greenery to it, and it just seems to be lacking in detail. I can't really explain it. It doesn't feel like an authentic experience. I mean, the American Frontierland, in terms of Magic Kingdom's obviously getting completely destroyed by Piston Peak, which I'm sure will be amazing. But, you know, the idea of cars with eyes running past is not going to be the Old West. In Disneyland Paris, I do love Thunder Mesa, and I think it's all very, very nice, and it'd be better if they restored the Mark Twain on the Rivers of America. And Hotel Cheyenne, I've stayed there many times, but Hotel Cheyenne is very superficial, and I think it suffers from what Disneyland Paris is now playing a huge amount of catch-up on, and a lot of European theme parks like this, which is poor ongoing maintenance. Whereas Disneyland Paris, I think, is one of the world's finest examples of a park where they spared no expense. They made it beautifully detailed and everything was, you know, to within a T. And then once they handed it over to the operating side of the business, and of course there wasn't the money, the idea of preventative maintenance has gone out the window. So Hotel Cheyenne, you can walk down the street and they've just relayed a bit in normal plain tarmac. And you go, that you wouldn't have had black tarmac in the West. I would have expected some kind of beige concrete, maybe with some hoof prints in it and things like this to create the theme. And there's things like you can see modern wiring ducts and stuff that's, you know, it's a visual contradiction. So they don't do it for me. And then I discovered PortAventura completely by accident when I'd heard rumors years ago that there was a Universal park in Spain, because that was at the time it was.
Yeah. Which Universal everyone forgets. Everyone talks about Universal UK being the first, and it won't be, actually.
No, and there was rumours before Bedford was announced that Universal were looking at taking it back over, weren't they? And that seems to have gone quiet.
Yes.
But I think if I remember rightly, when Universal took it over, that's where the Woody logo came from, because of course
that's
Universal
why he's there, which cause it is a bit random.
It is a bit random. Although, I mean, they use him as an icon very well. Mm. But it was a park that was, I want to say, was it the Tussauds Group and Busch Anheuser who built it originally?
Yeah, which is why John Wardley was involved in it.
Yes, of course. But their Far West land, which is a substantial portion of the park, I think is stunningly detailed. You can wander through there in an immersive environment. It's very difficult to find visual contradictions. There's the way it's laid out. It's not just a plain street. The theme park isn't flat, which actually I find a plus. I mean, you do a lot of steps, but it feels more like a realistic environment. You know, the railway through the Western land goes over a huge trestle bridge over a canyon because nothing is flat. It looks more natural. And then a few years later, by this point, it had become PortAventura. So it had been bought out by whatever, the La Caxia Bank Investment Group were on it. They built Hotel Gold River. And that, to me, was the thing that has signed it off as being the perfect part, because that hotel is a full Western town. I think on my little YouTube channel where I did a walkthrough video, just because I love it so much, the whole hotel is a town. And the detail is astronomical, to the point of where you can stay in the city hall. Once you're in the town, you can't see out of it. There's the opera house. You can stay in the brothel, the Madame's brothel in the corner. There is the dentist, the gambling den, the bank, the sheriff. You can even stay in the jail. And at the top of the street, there is the train station. You can stay in the train station. There's a full-size train outside. And then there's the more five-star massive mansion at the end of the street, which all fits in with the story that it was Lucy Callaghan, whose family found gold here, and that's her, of course, posh mansion the town built up. And then there's the entrance to the gold mine, of which the river comes out through. It forms the swimming pools, and that's the Hotel Gold River that runs through the park. And there's even then a separate hotel within a hotel called Callaghan's, which you can stay in as well. So the theming and the detail, I genuinely feel I can stay there for a week, as we have done, and you know, my kids have a habit of wandering through and go, the West, and there's music playing out of little what look like cactuses and stones and everything else. And as I mentioned before, it's not perfectly clean and sanitized, but it feels arid. It feels like, you know, it's dusty. You look at the floor, even to the point of where in the streets of the Western areas, you have the wooden posts and the beams where they used to tie horses up outside saloons. They're there, and then you look on the ground, and they've gone to the detail of putting horse prints within the concrete. So, you know, it's that level of detail. So as a park, it was sold on me there. And it's not just that area, you know, that there's the Mediterranean bit that you enter through, which is their Main Street USA. The Polynesian land, which feels lush and plush in terms of the environment. And of course they've got the climate, of course, that helps. China, which I have to say in recent years feels a bit forgotten. And
that's
then
where
you get
Dragon Khan, obviously.
Yes, Dragon Khan
standout attraction there.
But the thing is, since they introduced Sesame Street Land, which is their blatant, like every park did, we need a children's IP, Sesame Street Land has given a shortcut to bypass China. And so if you go on, so you can bypass China, you can go straight up to Dragon Khan and Shambhala, of course, which is possibly one of the best roller coasters ever created. But if you go down into China, where the boat ride used to be, it's almost deserted. The only thing there is the teacups. There's the bubble show, which is incredible, but all the restaurants are closed now because it doesn't really get the footfall.
That's
and
a shame.
Then you get through Mexico, and you know Mexico has the drop tower and things like this, but it's the theming that really gets it for me.
Yeah, I mean, I first visited Port Ventura when I was, I think, 14 or 15. So we are going back 25 plus years. And I was an enthusiast.
You were a baby in arms.
I was, honestly, I mean, I barely met the height restrictions. But I remember being told that we were going to go there, and I was very excited because I was sort of new into my theme park enthusiast game. And this was really the big, the first non-UK park other than Florida where I'd been, which I was going to go to. And I just remember absolutely adoring the park because it was so different to anything that we had in the UK. Like you say, it was a lot more immersive. And I always remember, like, it's so ingrained in me, even then, thinking I'm going from, say, Mediterranean into Polynesia, and I've noticed that the flooring has changed. I've noticed that the planting has changed. I've noticed that the music has changed. And it really feels like I've gone through a portal and I am now in this land. And I hadn't really experienced that before. Even though I'd been to Florida, I can't remember feeling it in a way that I felt like that about PortAventura. And the park was open till midnight. And I was getting all these rides in the dark. And it was, to me, as a 14, 15-year-old, it was just an amazing theme park experience. And it really elevated my love of theme parks, actually, visiting that park. I mean, Stampeder and Dragon Khan were fairly new attractions back then. So, you know, I don't remember any jankiness or anything like that. I remember Stampeder just thinking, oh, this is amazing. This is such a great ride. And for years and years afterwards, if anyone said to me, what's your favourite theme park, I would say PortAventura. And I went back a few times, and I went back as an adult, and then I went back in 2019, which was the last time I visited. And for me then, it wasn't quite as good as I'd remembered it, and it was kind of heartbreaking to think, oh, this is the park that I loved for so long, and it's not quite the same anymore. But really, the reason for that was the operations, which is something that's been talked about with PortAventura a lot in recent years, which is that the park is great, the theming's amazing, it's got some world-class attractions, but the operations were really letting it down to the point where if you hadn't bought a fast pass, it was almost impossible to have a good day out. And it wasn't just that there was long queues, it was like they were frustratingly long because you could see people weren't working as quickly as they could to get trains loaded and dispatched. It's one of those really annoying things where it's not just like, oh, there's so many people that there's a big queue. It's this queue is big because those people are not working in the way that you'd expect them to work. You got back a couple of weeks ago. What was your experience of that? Did you get fast passes?
Yes, I did. I agree with you that there is something different about PortAventura. The thing that came to mind just as an aside where you were talking about when you walk from Mediterranean to Polynesia, I call it the crystal maze effect. You know, that sort of when you're going between zones. And that's the thing that always has to work for me. And it's a case of once you've turned a corner, you can't see where you've come from. So that I find is brilliant. Now, I went there last year as well as this year. And last year we did PortAventura, then we went up to Efteling. You know, I have to always show off from Efteling, my little street lamp there that sits here. Then we went to Fantasialand. And I have to say that last year, I would have said PortAventura's operations, yes, they were bad. And I spent almost, you know, a fortune by mortgaging bodily organs in order to pay for fast passes. This year, they were improved. However, I felt it was improved from the point of view of what you say, that people, you know, didn't seem to be working hard enough. And the staff this year seemed to be much improved. The thing that's screaming out from the park for me is it feels like they're not spending enough on maintenance. And I mean that aesthetically, and I mean that in terms of ride breakdowns as well. Stampeder, I mean, when you're there for 7 days, obviously you can spread stuff out. And Stampeda is my youngest's favourite ride. So I think we totaled about, must be 12 to 15 rides on it over the week. And the number of breakdowns was quite shocking. For the first 4 days, there was only one train working, as in Ooh. The red side. The blue side, who knows? There was no racing involved. Yeah. Funnily enough, the queue moves quicker when there's only one train. The one side.
Really?
Yeah. I wouldn't have thought that. But yeah, the queue lines are shorter when there's only one side work because they don't seem to have to wait for the other train to load.
Yeah, you know. Maybe. Yeah.
But I sat there going, this is a bit bad. And there seems to be some kind of, you know, from an aesthetics point of view, it's always bugged me the amount of graffiti on Stampeda. And you can see that they've sanded it all off and people keep on putting it back. Yeah, it can be a bit awkward with some of the things that people write when you've got youngsters there. But it's okay. I think he thought it was some cherries or something like that. But the Grand Canyon River Rapids, when we were there, were not open for the entire week. Now, the temperatures were 35, 36.
Ooh.
You want a water ride.
Yeah, and they're a good rapids.
They're a very good rapid.
They're a bit of a soaker.
Yeah, but when you look down at the rapids, and I think I sent you a photo of it, when you look down, the sort of canyon rocks around the rapids were all missing their paint. It was just the paint's all scuffed off, and it's just white cement because it's not been repainted. Mm-hmm. And then things like the Chetuki Splash, where you go up a volcano and you get to the very top and you look down and you can see where the gas jets and the steam things used to be. And there's just bits of dirt and everything else and, a bit of wires. And the effect has long since not been used. And in the queue for Chetuki Splash, all the thatched roofs over the queue, they're just missing. There's massive gaps of just thatch missing where there's just holes in the roof. And you sit there going, this is basic maintenance. The aesthetics, I don't like the fact that, when I'm walking up the main street in Hotel Gold River, on the left for the second year running, there's still a big panel of the Western theming that's missing. And you can see the main brickwork behind it on one of the buildings. And you sit there going, if it was there last year and you had it planned in your maintenance schedule, I'd accept it. But it's now 2 years. You know, that you're walking around the far west and there's places with, you can either see visible rot on buildings or paint peeling. And you sit there going, this normally is a sign that you're cutting corners. It normally, and I'm sorry to have a go at him, it normally means an accountant's looked at a spreadsheet. Sorry, Ross.
Hello, Ross.
And we all know that's the first way they love to cut on maintenance. They always think, I've got friends who work in the government treasury over here, and whenever you chat to them, they talk about, deferred maintenance. You know, you put it back to next year. You're not. It's a complete idiotic idea. It works only on a spreadsheet. Deferred maintenance means that actually you're going to spend more in the long run tidying things up. Disneyland Paris has got that big problem right now. They're spending a fortune. Every time you look at any Disney Paris update, they're constantly, they're painting this, or they're having to rebuild this, or they're having to redo the guys. And you sit there going, if you did it as you went along, it would be cheaper and a better guest experience. Mm. So they, in terms of the attention to detail and the maintenance, I feel that someone in PortAventura management needs to do a Jeffrey Thompson. They need to walk the park, and they need to walk the park with a critical eye and have a look and go, oh, actually, the walk in the guest experience, what doesn't look right? Someone with ADHD like me, who wants to look at the detail, because there is so much they do right. That new ride Uncharted, it's not new anymore, it's a couple of years old. But
I've not been there since it's been open. So, yeah, is it worth it?
It is worth it. I mean, it's in Spanish, so if you don't speak Spanish, you probably won't understand what's going on. But the ride experience itself is amazing. But they built, and I remember being there when they were building it, and it was a huge steel frame building in the west. And I thought, yeah, this, how are they going to cover this? And I take my hats off to them, that the front of Valhalla could learn a lot from Uncharted. Uncharted is a big Indian mountain range in the sort of style of Big Thunder Mountain, but instead of just covering a box with that, It's got gradients. It's got perspective. It's they've got trees at certain heights that are supported. Full force perspective. It's not just a box. It goes up and down all over the place. So it's excellent. The only thing is, and this is where I feel that some... It's almost like the Disney Imagineering teams who built studios in Paris and California Adventure. You know, the it'll do. So they've spent a fortune making that look absolutely amazing. And then out of the back of it, you see this huge steel water slide from next door's water park, which originally the design was for it to be in a volcano. So you sit there going, that would have blended in a rock work. Now, wherever you're in the West, you look at Uncharted and you go, you've spent all that money for it to be ruined there. And then on the front of it, the Uncharted sign is in modern font. And you go, why? You've spent so much on everything else, and there's little details of little adverts and signs, and you go, yeah, it's almost a case of, well, that was enough, you know. And those kind of things bug me, but I do feel that someone somewhere is penny pinching a bit, and I get PortAventura hasn't got the same footfall as Disney Paris. It hasn't got the same IP, the same pull. But it's a profitable park. It's very popular with the locals. But yeah, maintenance seems to be an issue. There were my kids were always joking every day when we checked on the app as to which one's gone tech.
Really?
They were going tech a lot, the rides. If you want a fine example, though, of PortAventura's maintenance, go on their Anchor water ride, where on the boat we were on,
It's a splash battle, isn't it?
You know, the ones that you have to run. Only two of the water jets actually worked. And as you go around on the ride, none of the targets work anymore. There's no point in actually firing anything because there's not the targets are just not there. They're all rusted. None of the theming works. It's just a case of just going a little water ride around and back again. You sit there going, I feel shortchanged. You know, spend money on maintaining your rides and your aesthetics because the operations seem to be going fine, but you had to work around tech stops, which happen, but there seem to be so many more.
It's frustrating when you think, oh, one thing's getting better, then the operations are getting better, but then if it's at the expense of then reliability, you know better. The staff can only do so much. If they can be working perfectly as a team and seamlessly, but if the rides are then throwing up technical issues and they're having to shut them down, there's nothing that they can do about that. And it's almost like, right, maybe we've spent money on staff retention and recruitment and getting them to be really good. But to do that, we've had to take our eye off the ball with something else. And that is the maintenance or the upkeep of the park. And, you know, you might listen to this. If you listen to this, you're probably a theme park fan, so you understand. But a layman might listen to this and go, why does it matter if the font on a sign is modern? But it's like you say, it's that it's always been so good at immersion, that park, and doing everything in keeping and doing everything right. So when it's like they've used a font like that, you do just think, but why? Because would it have cost much more to have just made it look right? And it's you do notice little decisions like that. And I know that we are theme park fans and we notice it more than others. But even an average guest can take an experience and go, I really love that experience. I love the way that park made me feel. And you're more likely to do that if you are in keeping all the way through, I think.
It's a bit like if you like watching, say, a World War II film, you know, if I watch the Dam Busters, I don't expect the Starship Enterprise to fly in and bomb the dams. Gladiator, you know, we all know about it. You can probably see a guy walking around with jeans or a Coke can in the background or something like this. But there are reasons. I mean, Walt Disney's philosophy of Disneyland, the first, in theory, theme park, was you were walking into a live movie. The whole point of, you know, when you're going under the tunnels at the beginning of Disneyland, you're entering into the theatre, everyone's a cast member, you're part of the film. Well, if you use that analogy, a film doesn't have, you know, if something is set like, you know, Christopher Nolan's Dunkirk doesn't have, you know, like, I don't know, a stealth bomber flying over, you know, you don't have those contradictions, so you shouldn't have them in a theme park. Saying that, I realise that I'm really picky, and I will openly admit I am terrible for emailing parks after I've been there.
Strongly
worded email. However, I've done it to both Disney Paris and Port Aventura, and I've made very clear at the beginning this is not a complaint, and this is not me wanting it. I don't get any freebies from it or anything else. I'm a big supporter of your park. I thought you'd like to hear where I feel, you know, as a guest, that things, you know, need to be improved upon. I feel that I've highlighted these things to them. You sit there going, it wouldn't take much to sort them out. On the other side of it, the actual, you know, experience for Russell in terms of, you know, has he made a mistake? No. This is me being critical, from a point of view of someone who loves the park, and we were there for 7 days. We did have a magnificent time. I probably spent a little too much on fast passes. Uncharted, if you can ever get to Uncharted, and the operations on Uncharted are brilliant. They really are. But it is the number one ride. The queue never drops below an hour, no matter how quickly they do stuff. But the fast pass for one ride on that is €34.
Each.
Yeah.
Ooh! Wow.
Now,
did you cave?
I did pay it.
Yeah.
Oh, I might have caved three times, but don't tell my wife because it was in the boys' part of the evening. And there's various different fast pass options throughout the day.
€34 each. That, yeah. I don't think I've ever heard of a one shot that much.
Yeah. It's
wow.
And, do you know what though? I would say the ride's worth it. I think it's excellent. You know, I was very disappointed if Project Horizon at Alton Towers was going to be rumoured along with being the same sort of ride. It's brilliant.
Yeah, one incarnation. And, yeah,
and it's Intamin, if I remember rightly. Mm-hmm. And it's beautiful ride track compared to Furious Bacco, which is an Intamin at Port Aventura. That is a wild ride, but it's not the smoothest that Intamin has ever built. I think the experience Russell will get, if he likes that kind of themed and immersion, he will get it. The other thing that's it's really good for is, I'm not sure if he's staying within the Port Aventura hotels, but the El Paso Hotel, which is the one that Universal built, that's all-inclusive, drinks included, the whole lot. That's the family hotel. But we went with the all-inclusive dinner, bed and breakfast, effectively, at Gold River. The breakfast offering is substantial. It's a huge buffet. And that's one thing that Port Aventura does better than any other theme park I've ever been to, is the food and the quality of it. Because when you go on park at lunchtime it's now a code in your app. It used to be a voucher. Code in your app. And there's a whole variety of different restaurants in the park where you can have your lunch. And you have to have a three-course meal for lunch. And you have to take the choice. This is what part of it, you know. So for starters, you'll have a chicken Caesar salad or something like this. For mains, it will be salmon with rice, or it will be a bowl of chili and a taco, depending on which land you're in, of course. And for dessert, it'll be fresh fruit, or there's yogurt, or there's cake and things like that, with a drink included. And you sit there going, I can't remember ever going to a theme park where, as part of all inclusive, I got fish and rice and salad.
Yeah, no, that sounds excellent.
The quality of the food, and I do love the mozzarella salad at the Sesame Street Land. It's the only reason I go back. the value proposition for Port Aventura, I don't think you'll get value for money in terms of your holiday anywhere else in the theme park as good as Port Aventura, fast passes excluded.
Yes, if you do need to add them on.
Yeah. The other side of things is, was Ferrari Land there when you last went?
Yeah, so I did Ferrari Land. Well, I say I did Ferrari Land. Basically, I did Red Force. I don't do drop towers, as we know, if we're regular listeners of the podcast. So the other rides in Ferrari Land were kind of meh. But I mean, Red Force is worth the ticket price alone, of course. You can't go to Port Ventura and not go on it.
The thing about Ferrari Land is Red Force is amazing. I did go in the flying theatres and things like that. They're okay. Mainly if you want to get rid of the heat, because Ferrari Land's got no shade.
Yeah.
It's got no shade at all. They've done some nice architecture in there. The restaurant in Ferrari Land is amazing. The Italian restaurant, if you go in there in the evening, once again, part of your all-inclusive. But there's not much to do. I mean, even PortAventura know that. They only open it at 5 o'clock at night. But the Flying Theatre and the other one's more like a simulator ride, a bit like Back to the Future, just not as good. That you go in there for the air conditioning. The air conditioning is amazing, but you can't really get into the Flying Theatre experience because it doesn't hang you out far enough like Soarin' does. You can still see the railing in front of you, so it kind of kills it. Ferrari Land to me does seem like it was a bit of an IP agreement that they've never really fully realised. It almost feels on borrowed time unless they're going to invest in it.
I feel like it just needs to become a land rather than a second gate. You know, it just needs to be incorporated, and maybe the entry price for PortAventura goes up a bit, not as much as the buying two tickets, but it just kind of incorporates itself.
Yeah.
And maybe, I mean, I'm sure Ferrari have done a long deal, but if the Ferrari deal ever went, you could just retheme it to Italy or something, or I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah.
It's noticeably got an entrance directly into the park as well as an external one, isn't
it? Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. But saying that, I've thought that for about 10 years.
Yes.
It's still carrying on. So, yeah. I mean, who knows? Maybe it's much more successful than it appears to us from the outside.
And the only other thing about the PortAventura, I mean, there is the beach club and things like this, which I haven't actually been to for years because when you've got kids, they're not particularly interested in sitting in infinity pools and just watching the scenery. But of course, there is the water park, and they're still investing. When I got there, they'd only just opened this year a further expansion in a big family area to the water park. So it's now really almost up against Hotel Gold River. For those of you who don't know the map of PortAventura, effectively, the theme park is huge. But along the bottom of the theme park into what was the original car park, they built this water park. I think Universal built the first bit, then they've extended it when they built that tower that's meant to be a volcano. Should be a volcano. And then the children's area, the family area, opened this year. And then Hotel Gold River is actually on the other side of the park, off the back of the Western Land. From what I could see, we didn't go in the water park this time. The water park is an excellent water park. It's very, very busy. I just can't be bothered queuing for slides.
Yeah, I'm like that.
Yeah. There's something about queuing for slides that I just find mindlessly boring.
Especially if you've got a big ring. You're having to carry a big ring around.
Yeah.
No, not doing
that. Thank you. Well, the other thing is that theme parks try and keep you entertained in queues. You know, they don't do that with water parks. They just stand there. There you go.
And it's just up steps and steps and steps. And I'm not good with heights at the best of times. So going up a load of metal steps with a big ring in my swing costume, feeling very exposed. It's not for me.
I can see what they're doing because they're trying to make people stay longer, which is what all theme park resorts do, and it's successful. The big thing about PortAventura that kind of goes under the radar is the entertainment offering, because in Polynesia they have the Hawaiian show. The fire show in the evening is stunning. It's something well worth going to. Of course, for an extra price per person, you can reserve your seats for all these shows as well. I would recommend doing that for the evening parade and fireworks. That was the best value for money I've ever spent, because the evening parade at around about, I think, is it 10:30? It comes round Mediterranean, where the lake is, by the entrance, and they did the whole parade with all the characters and all the people from the different shows throughout the park, and then it finishes with their Fiesta PortAventura, which is their firework drone show, and I don't know what you call them. They're guys lit up in LEDs, and they have the water jets on that fly.
I know what you mean. Yeah,
That's incredible. But for a small fee, you can have a dedicated seated viewing area where you have drinks included. That's worth the money. There's the fire show in Polynesia. Sesame Street, or the Sesame Street Land, does have a lunchtime show, which is actually worth going because it's got the all-inclusive food. So you sit there on a tier with your food and watch the Elmo show, if you've got kids that age. There is also the bubble show, which takes place in China. That is truly excellent. It's my wife's favourite. In the theatre up in China / Mexico, because somebody here didn't realise until my wife pointed out last year that actually it's the same theatre, there's just two different entrances from two different lands. I thought it was two separate theatres. Who knew? and I couldn't work out why they had the same show in two different theatres. They do this big PortAventura musical show where it's Broadway style musical. It's excellent with show effects, music, acrobatics, circus tricks, the whole lot. But it's done to an unbelievably high standard. We saved that until the last night, and my youngest wanted to go back and see it again the next day. He loved it; he thought it was brilliant. And then if you keep going around the park in Mexico, the hidden away cantina where you get your food again has got this massive Mexican street inside, beautifully air conditioned. So you get your food, you sit there at lunchtime, and then they do a full Mexican dance show for you. And then when you get back to the West, they've got the Wild West Frenzy stunt show, because of course you don't see many stunt shows, Western stunt shows anymore. That's truly excellent. And then they've got the Salon Can-Can Girl sort of performance there. So there is tons of entertainment. Mm. You really have to plan it out if you want to see it.
Yeah, so it's not all about the rides. And we forget that sometimes, I think, as especially roller coaster enthusiasts, we're like, we'll go from that to that to that to that. But that isn't the whole theme park experience. So maybe if, you know, there are rides going down, at least there is something else you can do. Unlike some parks we won't mention, where when the rides go down, there is no entertainment left at all. You are one of the first people actually that I've spoken to, you might be the first, who has ridden Dragon Khan since its retrack, which obviously happened over the last year. It was getting very janky. It was beautifully smooth when it opened. Obviously, perfect B&M when it opened. How is it since the retrack?
Well.
Oh, God.
B&M, where did it go wrong?
Oh, no.
It was interesting because my eldest is, they're both quite roller coaster nutters, but my eldest, he got the bug last year, and this was the first year he would go on Dragon Khan, and we had to go on it a lot. And I'm not great with G-forces until you taught me a new technique, and that does genuinely work. I can tell you now. That's it, squeeze your butt, because I did that every time on Dragon Khan, and I loved it. However, the first time we went on it, I was telling him that this is a new retrack and everything else. Rumours are it's not too good. And, of course, you can see the sections that retract because the bolts that hold the track together are still silver, whereas the ones that were old have been painted red over the years. And you can tell. I sat at the front, and it is as different as, you know, night and day. It really is. The old B&M is still comparatively smooth. The new one...
No!
Yeah.
So the new sections are worse?
The new sections are dreadful. You can
so
feel it.
That's disappointing.
It's really bad. And you can tell when you go over the join. I can point to you. If I hadn't seen photos of it being retracked, I can just tell you by riding on the ride, there's the new bit. There's the new bit.
How weird.
Because it's a bit like, I mean, Stampeder there, which is their wooden racing coaster. I have to say that I'm trying to work out which is rougher now, Stampeder or Grand National. And I think Stampeder wins. Yeah, there is one.
Really?
Well, they've redone certain section
with Titan
Track. And I'm not going to lie, I know people hate Titan Track, but it was nice. It was lovely.
it's a bit of respite.
But the thing is, after you come off the Titan Track, there's one sort of bunny hump that it goes up where genuinely I didn't know whether to brace myself or anything. It was so painful and literally so battered you. I'm sitting there going, God, this track is dreadful. And there's no excuse for it. I don't believe that, you know, wooden roller coasters need to be that rough. They can be retracked. When it came to Dragon Khan, dear Lord, you can tell it's not uncomfortable, but it rattles. And then when you go on Shambhala, which is a B&M, and Shambhala is just unbelievably wonderful. It's a dream.
Yeah, and we should talk about that actually. You know, it gets talked about a lot as the standout attraction at the park, but it really is worth the hype, isn't it? It's such. In a way, it's a simple roller coaster. It does what roller coasters do. It goes up, it comes down. But your floaty airtime that you get on it, the smoothness of it, and the G-forces that you get on it, for me, it makes it such an excellent ride experience. For quite a while, it was my number one coaster. It has slipped down a bit, but I haven't been on it for a few years. So I do want to get back on it and say, actually, is it better than the things that I've kind of placed above it now since? It is a fantastic ride experience.
It is a wonderful ride experience. I've never been a fan of sitting at the front of roller coasters because I always like, you know, the parabola, obviously, effect, which means if you sit near the back, you get more of the floaty airtime as the front drags you down. So I always try and get near the back. And I've always loved that floaty feeling. And Shambhala, of course, because it's got those hip restraints, and there's nothing at the sides of it, and your feet are dangling, you do feel like you're flying in this, you know, whatever it is, 200, 300 feet in the air. But I this time I went on it in the evening, and it almost felt spiritual. I just put my hands up, my legs up, and you float down. And I thought, God, this is wonderful because it's so smooth. The only thing I would say about Shambhala, word to the wise, is that the ride itself is stunning. There's nothing I can criticize about the ride. The operations were very good. I paid for a fast pass occasionally when I was just like, oh, I just want to go on it. But actually, the queue moves quite quickly. The thing to watch out for is that the seats are not sat 2-2-2. And they video you when you go around, so you can buy the video at the end. So there's, for each car, there is two, the front of the car, the two seats are together, and then behind them, so you get a better view, the seats are further out. So it's they're close together and further out, which means that when you're on the ride with a member of your family and things like this, if you sit in the front seats where the two seats are together, you're on the same video. When you sit on the one behind it, the two videos are separate, and they'll charge you double for it. So basically, if I sit two seats together, it costs whatever, 20 quid for me and my son to have our video. But then when we went on it, and we'd queued for ages, and they said, well, no, that's going to be £40 because it's two videos. It's like, I feel like it's a bit of a squid.
You would naturally sit to one side. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you'd think it would take a video of the two on the left and the two on the right, rather than the two in the middle. The other thing to be aware of on that ride, if you're not using a fast pass, it has got the world's worst queue line. It's just a pure cattle pen with nothing going on at all, and no air conditioning, just some fans. I mean, honestly, it sends shivers down my spine thinking about it. It is the world's worst queuing experience. So yeah, if you're on a fast pass, you're fine. Yeah. But otherwise,
ironically, no air conditioning. It's boiling hot, and the ride is themed to being in the Himalayas.
Nothing takes away, like you say, from that ride. It is really an excellent roller coaster. It's worth going to Port Ventura for that alone.
Yes,
but hopefully we have got across that there is enough there as well, even when stuff's going down. I mean, this is a jam-packed park. There are so many attractions there, filler attractions as well, flat rides, so there will always be something that you can do, even if you are frustrated that
We spent seven days there, or was it 7 nights, 8 days, whatever. Anyway, and we didn't go out into Salou. Probably doesn't do the Salou tourist board any good. Sorry, and we didn't even go to the water park. So between Port Aventura and Ferrari Land, we managed 7 days, and the kids were not bored. And they're at the age where kids get bored. And we weren't as adults either. There is plenty to do. We haven't even touched on the Diablo mine train. There is, of course, the drop tower.
It's probably best not to touch on that. That is the weirdest ride experience. I mean, I don't want to spoil it for you, Russell, but if you like lift hills, you'll enjoy the mine train.
It's an arrow coaster as well.
It is very random.
It is very random, and that has VR on it, but I've never bothered with that.
That's interesting. That's new.
Yeah, so you can pay to sit near the front and put a VR headset on, and you'll see, it's one of these VR ones where you can see what's going on, but also maybe a serpent will suddenly fly out at you. Augmented, yeah. Yes. There's the Temple de Fuego, which is their version of Tornado Jones, which isn't Indiana Jones, of course. And that's a good stunt show. It's worth seeing once, but it's the effect you'll see unless you speak Spanish. There's Tomahawk, which is the roller coaster that's intertwined. I say junior, but it's got quite a kick. It's intertwined with Stampeda. And it's got a wonderful railway, which is very disorienting because the route for it is a circle, but it kind of goes back on itself and then goes alongside itself. You can never work out where you are, which actually is quite nice. You feel like you're getting lost in the jungle. So, shoot 'em up ride with Sesame Street Street Mission. I'd say, Russell, it's well worth going to PortAventura. The issues, you know, if anyone from PortAventura ever listens to this podcast, which I'm sure they do,
obviously.
obviously, is just walk your park and just have a look at what looks like it's tatty. I don't want to see tatty stuff, and I don't want to see backstage. I think I sent you a photo, didn't I, that when I was there, some of the railway carriages were up on blocks right next to the guests, and you go, I don't want to see this. You know, yeah. You've got plenty yeah. of space, hide it out the way. But yeah, Sesame Street Land needs a coat of paint. Sesame Street Land needs a jet washing. It's looking tired. It's a harsh climate with all that sun. Just, you know, spend a bit on tightening stuff up.
You went for 7 days. If someone's not been before, how long would you say to allow to go for your first visit?
Depends who you're going with. If you're going with a family and kids, I'd say a minimum of 5. And don't cram stuff in, because you have to remember the Spanish way of life. You know, they siesta in the afternoon. The theme park doesn't. You can stay there in the afternoon, but it gets very, very hot. I mean, our day would be breakfast quite early on, get into the park first thing for maybe 2-3 hours. You'd have lunch in the park and then back to the hotel for the swimming pool, because it's just too hot. So we stayed. I mean, we went in July, but go to the swimming pool in the afternoon. And then the thing with PortAventura, which you don't normally feel with other theme parks, is go in the evening. Yes. Go back in the evening. I mean, yeah. There's an Iron Horse restaurant, which is my favourite in the West, although it has got 2 broken windows in it, PortAventura. I emailed you about this twice. It is the most beautiful Western boarding house style restaurant. We go there for tea and then spend an evening on park. And by then, the queues have died down. The temperature is quite nice. Most people, because it's so popular with locals or people doing day trips, that the queues are all big in the afternoon. So if you're staying there, avoid it. And there's plenty of other stuff to do. I would say 5 days.
There's something amazing about being in a theme park in the evening, I think. We don't get to do it very much. There's not many places you can do it, even within Europe. So, yeah, being able to do that as it gets dark and, as you say, as it gets cooler. And then if you've got fireworks and stuff, yeah, perfect.
And the best part is, once the fireworks are over, you then, for Hotel Gold River, of course, which is on the far side of the park, once it's over, you get to walk back through the park at night after everything's closing down, and the atmosphere is wonderful. I think the only other park I've ever walked through at night, obviously, is Pleasure Beach, when we've done Hot Ice on the opening night, and of course they let us back through to the boulevard, and there's just something magical about no one there. It's lovely.
Yeah, well, there you go, Russell. Hopefully we've allayed some of your fears. Honestly, you don't need to worry. You will have a great time there, and especially if you've never been before, experiencing all of these things for the first time, you will love it. I think it's just, like Alex said, a few things to be aware of. The Fast Pass being one of them. You might not need one, depending on when you go. If as Alex said, the operations get better, you can wait and see on the day, and maybe buy a Fast Pass on the day if you think you need it. And if you're staying on site, sounds like you're going to have an excellent time. So do let us know how you get on. And hopefully this has been useful for you. If you've never been to PortAventura, you've been considering a trip there, this has given you a bit of information about that. That is what we aim to do here when we talk about our visits to theme parks. Alex, thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you. It's been lovely. We'll have to get the band back together next time. It's felt strange without Glenn here. So I think we need to take them to PortAventura.
As soon as you said the word fast pass, though, his little ears would have pricked up. And he would have been right in there. But yes, we will be back very soon here on Parkcast. As I said, final day today if you are listening on Friday the 28th of August to vote in the Theme Park Awards. So please go and do that right after you've listened to this. And whilst you're doing it, if you'd like to leave us a review or let us know what you thought about today's episode, please do that as well. I always welcome them. For now, though, we've been Parkcast.
Parkcast. The UK's original theme park podcast.